Welcome to the HBO's podcast, where we put the hoe in Hollywood. We're your hosts, Maddie and Sam, here to discuss trending pop culture, TV, and movies.
Welcome back to the HBO's podcast, everybody. Today we are talking about House of the Dragon Season 2, Episode 2, Rhaenyra the Cruel. My gosh. Okay, I'm going to start us off with our friendly neighborhood spoiler warning. If you have not seen House of the Dragon Season 1 or Season 2 to date, meaning Season 1 and Episode 2, please get out of here. Go watch it. It's been great. Come back when you're ready for some fucking tea and goss and all that. Also, you know, we talk about Game of Thrones a lot. We compare this. It's the same world. So if you haven't seen Game of Thrones and you plan on watching it and you don't want spoilers, also please go watch that. I've watched it 12 times in my life. You can do it once.
Truly.
Okay, I'll start us off with House of the Dragon, Season 2, Episode 2. You know, directed by Claire Kilner, who also did the infamous Silk Street episode, if you know what I'm talking about. Writers George R. R. Martin, Ryan Condal, and Sarah Hess. And the synopsis is, as Otto schemes to turn the public against her, Rhaenyra questions Daemon's loyalty. Meanwhile, Sir Criston Cole concocts a misguided plan for revenge. Dun, dun, dun.
The plot thickens.
The plot is thickening. We've put some flour in that stock. And yeah, it is. all right, Maddie, start us off with
overall thoughts. I will go on record and say that to be honest, because it's a dialogue episode, it's a setup episode, I was a little bit bored. Like, just a little bit. I think that's just a personal flaw, though. Like, I don't think that's anything on their behalf. It was actually a long episode, and there was so much, like, speak and dialogue and, like, conniving behind the shadows and the walls. Not that I didn't appreciate all of that. I just think that something about the way it was done lost me a little bit. So I wish I could pinpoint that better for everybody, because I just sound like a hater, but what can you do?
Yeah. I mean, I literally have 4 pages of notes, because this is probably my favorite episode of House of the Dragon thus far. My first one is, this is just first bullet point of my overall thoughts. I'm going to keep this concise because we are going to touch on all of this throughout the episode, but first time I've ever liked Otto ever was this episode. So, and I only liked him for like a fraction of a second, but something in my soul was like, whoa, something changed.
I think a lot of people felt that way.
Yes. No, I'm sure. Cause you know, that's how the writers write, baby. Just adding on to that, it was like a double bullet, you know, underneath that, but like just the quote that, like, when him and Aegon are going back and forth, we'll get into this more when we talk about Aegon and Otto and all that, but just the ha 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 ha, is that what you think? It was just the slimiest punch ever. And and I thought it was great, and I'm like, yeah, okay, it's reckoning day, babies. Like, Otto hates himself, Aegon is, you know, on his way to complete narcissism, and I'm here for it. I'm here for the fallout.
Absolutely.
And then I think my like third thing is, like, we finally get to see Bela's dragon Moondancer, who is, like, from pictures from illustrations, I should say, I've always thought was the prettiest dragon. She's like silver, like a clamshell silver, and she's just the most gorgeous dragon. We finally get to see her. Yes. Yeah. We see her in the distance in this, and it's beautiful. It only lasts a couple seconds, but I know that we're going to get a lot more of Moondancer. And of course her name is Moondancer, because she looks like she's shining in moonlight. I feel like they did that. They just did it so well. I'm really excited for all of the dragons that we have to come this season. So that was a highlight. And then finally, the mention of Darren, who is Allison's other son that you would never otherwise really know about in the show. Right. But like, I have read like up to date, you know, in the book. So like, I know about him, and Darren has a big role to play, I assume, in the show. So I don't know, bullet points. Right.
Yeah, no, that was great. Definitely my overall thought was a little bit more general on kind of like the vibe. I was like, oh, okay, like this is a little bit, you know, Game of Thrones, they do this. They have action, and then here and there they have like builds, like story build, context, mm-hmm. what's been said, the way news travels. Mm-hmm. You know what? Sorry, this was off the pod, but Sam texted me like a week and a half ago and said, you know what this show really needed? A lady whistle down. So shout out Bridgerton, because she's not wrong. I'm like, the way news travels here is inaccurate and so slow. It really is so frustrating. It is so frustrating. I need Lady Whistledown to come in on her little, what would her dragon's name be? I don't know, something.
Oh gosh. Okay, this is a game for us on Instagram. I'm also just going to plug it here. If you guys don't already follow us on Instagram, HBO's pod at Instagram, we will be taking polls on what Lady Whistledown's dragon should be called.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely.
I am very curious about what the, you know, the audience thinks. But okay, let's start off with cinematography before we get into the juice of all of the characters and stuff, because like, although it seemed like a really slow episode, and it was a slow episode, there was so much story build, and all of these characters are so fucking deranged that there's just, I mean, I had a great time because I love the taboo, you know, like just under the cover lifestyle. Like, that shit makes me happy. And so a lot of what happened to this episode, I was like, oh, what is this? Oh, what is this? Like, oh, what is this? And so I was like enthralled. I also love war, you know, I love fighting and I love all that stuff. I don't like to see like animals dying, so it's going to be really hard for me to watch all the dragons die this season.
Yeah.
But also, mind you, Madison and I do not know what's going to happen. I have the book. I am almost done with the book, but I have only read to date. I don't want to ruin it for myself with the book that has no emotional context or dialogue or anything. Like, I want to watch it play out on screen and see how they do it first before I, like, I don't want to know that everybody that I love is going to die before I see it actually happen. Right. So with that being said, let's talk about the cinematography, because there were a couple scenes or just like shots in this that I really, really loved. Moondancer being one of them. I think that was my favorite. She just looked gorgeous up there. You know, and to be honest, I don't even know if Moondancer is a male or a female, but regardless, reptilians have been known to change when
non-binary, most likely.
Non-binary, and she's fluid.
They do what they do.
They're fluid. But that was one of the more gorgeous shots that I've seen in Game of Thrones. And I think it's because there's usually always this kind of like red wash, kind of like sepia tone, especially when they're outside, like on the beaches and King's Landing, everything, the Red Keep, everything is kind of red toned. So seeing her in contrast and just being so like vibrant and silver was just, it was absolutely stunning.
Yeah, it's nice to have like a cooler tone. We get a lot of red from the fire and the Targaryens just generally.
Right.
Yeah. And I think like we get a little bit of that with like the Valyrian family too, because they're sea. Like, so we get a lot more blue and silver, which is kind of nice. It's a bit of a reprieve like on the eyes.
Right. Okay. But Maddie, I know that you had thoughts on cinematography specifically.
Yeah. So I think it's when Daemon is leaving on his dragon. After him and Rhaenyra like get into their little fight, there's like, I don't know, he's like coming up over the cliff. It's like just a pretty shot before he like dives out. So I really appreciated that. Also, the beginning was kind of dark.
Oh yeah.
Dark. And the one thing, like, there's another scene where Aegon goes back and he's looking in where him and Kristen were like moving pieces on the war board. And he like bends down and he picks up a piece, like a coin of sorts. But I couldn't tell what it was. I have no idea what it was.
Okay, so I actually looked this up. So in the last episode is when him and Kristen were on the war board and yes. doing all that. He basically Aegon, what my theory is, because I paused it, and if you pause it at the right moment, you see when he comes back in this episode and he looks under the table to see if anything was like rummaged with or whatever, he finds this coin. The coin is, if you pause it at the like right moment, I don't know how the fuck I paused it at the right second, but it's a sun. It's like a, I don't know how many like spears or how many points the sun had, but it's a sun, which could mean a lot of things. The Dornish specifically use the sun a lot and like their sigils and, you know, and their, I don't know, but specifically what I think happened or what he kind of got from that was that he understood that they were, whoever was like killed Jaehaerys was actually after him first.
Oh, gotcha.
And I think that because he kind of like pulls it up, you know, to his face for the, you know, the camera, and he kind of smirks a little bit. And then later on, we see him in the brothel, and we'll get to that. But
okay. My point is, the scenes were dark. It definitely lines up by the end, which I could appreciate. But, you know, like, I know that they are not using a lot of, like, unnatural lighting for this shooting. Like, they go right. to locations, and they rely on, like, fire and, like, the moonlight.
Right.
So, like, is it the best choice? Yeah. I don't know.
Right. Well, I mean, I had, so the first, when I watched this on Sunday night, I don't know why it was so much like there's just there. And I rewatched it again right before this, but like, it wasn't as bad right before this, which is crazy because the sun was up. So like, I don't know. I'm just like, are they making this for daytime television? Like, is this General Hospital? I don't know. But like, when I watched it on Sunday night, I just recognize like this grainy kind of filter that, and it happens every time we're in the Red Keep is what I've noticed. And then I also saw that like in season one, I think it's episode three, when they're on Silk Street, Daemon and Rhaenyra are on Silk Street, there is also this kind of like grainy sort of filter or overlay or whatever it is. And I don't like it. And I think that with this episode, it wasn't like that the entire time. I only noticed it again when it was just the Red Keep, specifically when they were at the small council in the beginning. And then when Otto, Aegon, and Kristen Cole were standing in that one room. And I just like it. So it just almost makes it like the sharpness isn't that clear. The contrast isn't great. It clearly is not like photo editing. It's clearly like a filter over it. And so I guess my question, because I complained about it on Sunday night to Maddie, but it was just like, why? What's the point of that? It's not, I don't think it's adding any character to the scene. It's not adding any drama to the scene. It's almost,
that's a good question. I think I noticed that too, and I think, not to like cut you down, it's not like that. I think you're using maybe not the most accurate word. You're saying grainy, but I think you mean it's like blurred, kind of. It's like a vignette of sorts. Well,
yeah,
you're talking about right,
right, right. And like okay. I almost mean that like when like it, because like specifically there was I don't know, the stream on Mac's Instagram page, like it took stills from a scene that happened between Otto and Aegon when they were in that one, like in this situation, right, in that scene. And I was like, and I remember sending it to you, and I was like, yeah, see, this is what I mean. Like, you can't even get good stills or photography of this when it's, you know, this kind of,
that's a good question, actually. I wonder if it has anything, like, any meaning behind it. And did it happen in Game of Thrones?
No, well, I don't believe that it did, because I feel like I would have noticed it. I have, like, just a sharp eye about, like, when things don't. I'm just like, what? Like, why does this look so different? Like, I almost automatically notice. So, like, with this, like, the times that I've noticed it the most, and I'm going to do more research in it, is pretty much just been in the Red Keep. And I wonder, like, I feel like because of that, it's, and then also on the Street of Silk, when everything is probably supposed to feel, I don't know, loose and like, oh, we don't really know what's going on. And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm wondering the same thing. I'm like,
oh, I wonder if there's like a psychology, but like there's a thought behind it of like, we want viewers to understand immediately when they're in the Red Keep, because there's always this sort of.
Right. Like visual. This haze,
right?
This like heaviness, this fog, and maybe it does have something to do with like, you know, fog, haze, smoke and mirrors, them being in the shadows, you know. So
yeah, no, exactly. So like, and like, I'm not hating on it. It's not my favorite. Those aren't my favorite scenes to watch, but I do think that obviously there's a reason for it. Right, like there's a
we'll have to look into it. We'll have to hit up Reddit, see what there's what they're saying. What you saying, Reddit?
Okay, all right. Well, let's go right into if you're. Oh, well, I mean, the only other thing that I want to talk about the cinematography is, just, and this is just quick. We don't have to talk about it, but like, I just did want to mention that God, there is a scene. It's after Rhaenyra and Daemon fight, and she's. First of all, she as in Rhaenyra, they as in Emma Darcy, like fucking gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
My God. Just so beautiful. Skin good like beautiful. An angel. Like the most gorgeous eyes. Like anyways, I'm gonna stop fangirling. But there's a scene where she's kind of just in her thoughts and she's looking out the window and then like one of the like split scenes between that is just dust particles. And for like, I was just like, this is so minor and small and something that we all probably see every single day. But the way that the director made it just absolutely gorgeous. Like I was enthralled by it. I was like, yeah, okay, well this is art.
Lazy. Yeah, no, it was gorgeous. And also one last thing on cinematography, because I didn't notice it last week, but the opening, like the theme song, and they do like the embroidery build out. There's like little particles, and I was looking closely. It's both like fire and snow. I didn't realize that before.
Oh,
yeah, I'm pretty sure. Like, unless I'm fucking crazy, but it looks like both fire, like embers, and like little sparkling. Winter.
Oh, well, it could be. It could be ash.
Oh.
Because remember in Game of Thrones. Sorry, I'm calling back to Game of Thrones again. Spoiler warning. That time where Daenerys goes into the House of the Undying and she has the vision of like, it's the throne, and she's walking towards it, and there's like all of this white stuff falling, and no one knew whether that was ash or ice. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Man, good point. Really good point. That made me kind of sad though, because I'm like, oh, that means like ash from Dragonfire, just killing.
Right.
Oh no, not the innocents.
It's okay. All right, let's get right into fucking Aegon, because that, first of all, I just want to say, the actor's name is Tom Glenn Carney, and he fucking killed it. I was so impressed by his acting. He
agreed.
Like just the entire episode, he carried the entire thing on his back. He's such a like an emotional little like almost demon. He's almost over the cliff. You know, he's clearly not a good person, but he's not a demon yet. And you know, killing his 4-year-old son might just do it. And I am excited to see where this goes.
So I'm actually glad you said that. To be honest, looking at his reaction and what we know of him thus far, I don't think he's a demon. I think in regards to like seeking vengeance, you know, on the killers, it was probably called for in a royal sense, like especially with the rat catchers. I really hate to say that.
Oh.
I hate to say that. I truly do. God, I'm just going to be so canceled. But in his position, I understand why he did it. it's very clear to me. I'm like, oh, you have to do something in safety. And to me, like, all of his actions to me were very human. Like, I don't think that it was like sadistic. I don't think he's a torturer. I don't think, like, was it the right thing to do? No. Do I understand it? Yeah. Like, truly, you know, so
I agree. I think
that's kind of my thing with him right now. I'm like, oh, you are very human. And right. You said that before too.
Right. No, and I agree. I think that we, in the last episode that we recorded, we, like, one of my, the biggest talking points that I specifically wanted to talk about was, how do we compare him to King's past or King's future that we know of from watching these shows? And I think that he, and especially like Viserys, and then also like versus who Rhaenyra would be and as a ruler. And I think that with Aegon, like, I can relate to him wholeheartedly because I would do the same thing as him. Like, if, and I think that, first of all, I think that there's something commendable, because I don't think that he, in the beginning of the episode, obviously he's very angry and there's a lot of stuff that he's saying that's like, oh, Rhaenyra won and she's laughing at me and he was my dynasty. Ugh, and et cetera, et cetera. And all of these things that are so outside, they're just so external. They're not. But then at the end, by the end of the episode, we see him and he's just sobbing.
Yeah.
And you know that, like, from that, just the emotional output that he has in this episode, that it's not just legacy that he's after. It's not just power that he's after. He truly does love his kids, I think. Yeah. And so, and for me, as an incredibly maternal person with no kids yet, but like, it, like, I'm just like, I couldn't imagine it. It's like an insufferable thing. Like, I would seek, like, red. Like, I would see red. I would seek blood.
Yeah. He totally did. Like, it, that's why I say, like, it was such a human reaction. All of the kind of steps that he took after finding out, like,
right,
who the killers are, what happened, all of that.
Right. I feel like he's the one Aries kid where everyone around him is just like earth signs, and then maybe Helena's like an Aquarius.
Oh, like, God.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like Otto and Allison are like Virgo and Capricorn, 100%.
Gotta be.
And then, like, Aemon is probably a Virgo, Capricorn, and then maybe, yeah, no, actually that fits. And then Helena, the poor thing, is just like a triple Aquarius. And then Aegon is the only one that's just like, do you not feel what I feel?
Really,
and he's just
really,
like,
yeah, he's fiery,
truly burning inside. And I'm like, I get it. Like, I truly get it. Like, the thing is, the reason why in my overall thoughts I said that I liked Otto for the first time ever and didn't mention Aegon is because I've always liked Aegon in a way. I think that he's a dipshit sometimes, for sure. But, like, I also think that also the problem is that he makes decisions based on emotion, and is that fit for a king? Absolutely fucking not.
Well, right. And I was going to ask, how old is he supposed to be right now?
He's probably 17 or 18.
Right. Okay. So just even in that context, when I think about the age of how old he is and like just the emotional maturity, like, we know in science, like, humans' frontal lobes don't develop until like 20 something. And like, well, people that are neurodivergent or like have any, you know, like ADHD, I just learned this recently that like it actually takes even longer for them, like 28, 29, 30. I was like, oh shit. Like, you know, so thinking about him as a very young man with a lot of responsibility, already with two young children, like, his reaction is just so,
it's justified.
All of his reactions, they're justified, but it's like, I'm not trying to be ageist, but I'm like, oh, like, you cannot see further than what is happening now, because you just, like, you don't know better yet. You haven't had these experiences.
Well, right. No, but like, I think that in general, the losing a child, like, I could, can easily imagine myself at 60 losing a grandchild and raising fucking hell. Like, I get it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, yeah, maybe with all of his other decision making and not being, you know, as like kind of, I don't know, because like the thing is like we have on the green side, which is so interesting. We've got Allison and Otto that are very much aligned and they understand like the long game and they understand how to be poised and confident and also just like think ahead, right? They're playing chess, whereas like her children were never thought to think like that, right? Like Aegon never had the step by Viserys, like he never had Viserys, like he was never Viserys's like right hand. He was never like, and we talked about this in the last episode, but like he never got the treatment from his father like he was supposed to be around. And so, like, I don't know, there's also just this, like, not only, and what we said last time, it was not only, like, this, like, there's very much an ignorance of what it is to rule, because, yes. But, like, it's also, there's, like, an innocence in it.
Yes.
Of, like, he didn't know to expect that his son was, like, could potentially die from this war, right? Yeah. Like, and so I think that he... like outside of whether he is, you know, like is dealing with any kind of neurodivergence or anything like that, regardless, like, I feel like I connect with him, not connect, but like, I can really, really empathize with Aegon because I am an incredibly emotional person. I also base pretty much all of my decisions in life based off what I feel, you know, and what my gut tells me. And yeah. There are, 50% of the people are like that. 50% of the people are not, and they're logical and they base it off of, you know, not instinct, but fact. And so I don't know. I just completely understand Aegon in this situation. Do I think that I should be queen? Absolutely fucking not. Never in my life. Ever should I.
No.
Ever. Even no. When I'm 80 years old. No. No, 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 no. Like,
so I absolutely agree. Like, I like Aegon too. I liked him before. I do think that what we were talking about on the last episode of the pod and of the series, like how he'll be different. So it was really interesting. Like, when he first gets upset, he's basically smashing Viserys's like little.
His life's work.
Well, and they're all like 3D models. So let me tell you, I love the scene because I was like, oh, he's not going to be, I don't think he's going to be horrible, but he's not going to be like Viserys. Mm. And that was like a very telling thing. But on the other side of it, as someone who does a lot of hand build projects and has also made a lot of architectural models, I was pissed. Mm-hmm. I was so pissed for Viserys. I was like, this man has been paper macheing his whole life.
Literally.
He's been just making sand concrete in his bedroom. And you, did he smash the fucking dragon sculptures? Like, you piece of shit.
Right.
Those
right.
things are basically Pokemon cards before fucking Pokemon, you people.
Right.
I can't.
Right. Especially because, like, the whole thing was, like, of old Valyria. It was your history. It was your own history, bro. You know?
Yeah.
You white-haired piece of shit. Yeah.
That definitely hurt my heart on, like, a designing level. I was like, damn it. And also, shout out to the prop people, because that probably hurt their hearts, too.
Oh, I bet. Oh, my God.
Sorry.
First of all, I also just want to give, like, props to the prop people and to the set design people and to the architects and to the scouts that find these locations and to just the entire crew. We give enough shout-outs to the cast and their amazing acting and, like, well off. But, like, it, like, truly, truly, truly... I highly recommend that you watch the season of A House That Dragons Built on, if you're watching this on HBO Max or Max or whatever the fuck it's called now. I'm still not over it. But House That Dragons Built is so good because, like, the costume people, the makeup people, the hair people, everybody, there's so much that goes into shows like this. And, like, they hardly ever get recognized. And we sit here, me and Maddie, as podcast hosts, as well as, you know, hundreds, thousands of others, and we just critique the shit out of this stuff. And really, like, there's so much that goes into it. There's so much, like, effort. And you're right, Maddie, that just, like, you know, humbled me a little bit, because I'm like, you're right. That set of old Valyria that they made all throughout season one, I mean, he could have not been, I hope that that was just like a shitty replica that he was beating up, because we didn't really get close-ups of it like we did in season one. But the season one
must be, because
hopefully, and I hope whoever created it has it at their house and they just have it. Like, they just saved it. Like,
Pokemon, they just have the dragons on it. They just add more characters to it as the seasons go on.
Their imagines, or as their imaginations, you know, align.
So, okay, another moment that I just want to talk about with him real quick is Aegon and Helaena on the stairs.
Yes.
Great moment. It was very quick. And I don't know, like, I don't know exactly what my interpretation is of that, because at the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, it kind of gave he didn't give a fuck. But then I had to watch it again. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like a very still moment and very short, but he does make like a very sharp eye contact with her. And right after, she gives like a single nod and she kind of like quickly scurries up the stairs.
Right.
So, like I said, the first time I watched it and she scurries away, I'm like, okay, like, they're just not, I guess they're not on good terms. But then I was like, you know what? I actually do think they're on good terms when I saw it the second time around. And I think it was more on her than the nod.
Right.
And,
right,
like, just kind of, it was very much, like, to me, an acknowledgement of, like, this happened to us.
Right. Right.
Me and you as individuals, like, and also us as just parents mourning our child, not like the heir to our throne. You know, I know that's important to him too, but like, I know that she has always been like harder to understand for everybody. And I think like, even when they were young, like he already had that with her. Like, it was very hard for them to relate, probably because he was very emotional and she's like very aloof. In a sense,
she's Luna Lovegood.
And yeah, she's absolutely.
Like, she's Ron Weasley.
She's knows more but than like, everybody, but like, you know, like it doesn't come out.
Right,
and,
right. No,
and but like I, so no one takes her fucking seriously.
I agree. No, but I agree. I think that that scene, the first time I watched it, I was just like, okay, he's just brushing her off as he does. Right. And, and not only as he does, but like he's also, I mean, you've got to like, I think that I've learned in age that you've got to give people time and grace when they're dealing with shit, right? When they're dealing with trauma, like they're not always people that are, you know, dealing with trauma, especially very recent trauma, are not always going to meet you happily or meet you nicely whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And they shouldn't have to, right? You got to give them their grace. But like, so that's kind of what the impression was the first time I watched it. And then the second time I watched it, I was like, no, I think they locked eyes and they understood each other on a level of like, this is where I am right now. I can't mourn with you, but I understand.
Yeah. And I think like what's really, really interesting to me about that moment is like the style of communication. So I imagine that like speaking, quality time, like all these different things, like even like love languages, like that they may have tried was probably a bit like awkward. They don't quite relate, but they have found one certain way where it's like, it's a look. And you know, and you know, we all have that with people. We have that with friends. Sometimes we have it with partners, even with family. And I thought that like, it was a really nice nod to non-verbal like gestures, especially ones that are intuitive, you know, like, I don't know. I thought that was kind of like a cool move just in like communication generally.
Right. No, I agree. I agree. Okay. So let's talk about Alicent.
Oh God.
Alicent. I don't even want to.
All right. So,
can I just start off by saying that I'm a horrible bitch and I don't feel bad for her at all. Okay. And go.
That's fine. I actually, I don't know. Like in this episode, she also seems more human to me, like less concerned with fulfilling her duties, which is refreshing. Like, I don't know. I think it's going to be like a slow peel back for her when it comes to like deconstructing the ideas that were put into her, like growing up, her, what she believes in, all of those things. I don't know if she'll fully deconstruct. I don't know if that's in her story arc, but I don't know. Like, she did give me some very, I don't know. You know, you said she's probably earthy, but like, she gives me Cancer energy as fuck. Like, yeah, she's dutiful and she's probably got some earthy characteristics, but like, she is so family oriented. And I appreciate that about her. Like, she had a real moment. But what I don't like about her in this episode is that she is so fucking selfish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I know I was like kind of on feeling for her last episode and being like, oh, like, she's just been a girl of duty. But like, now I'm like, okay, you're selfish.
Wait, I need to know examples of why you think she's selfish.
Okay, so, you know, she asks Helena, or tells her, rather, that they have to go behind on the procession.
Oh, God, no. And so that was, sorry, I just to cut you off really quick, that was going to be my other cinematography thing, is that that was so, it was so brutal to watch, and it was so reminiscent of the Cersei, her atonement walk in Game of Thrones, because
they always do a good procession,
right? The streets were exactly the same. It felt the same, where people were throwing rice,
yeah,
or flowers or whatever they were, like very small flower, I don't know what they were throwing, but they were just throwing stuff at them. And the way that, sorry, just because I don't know if we're going to talk about Helena much in this episode, but the way that Helena reacted, and it's just like, Allison did put her up into this, knowing that she would not like it. And Helena said no. So yes, so I agree. But like, I just wanted to note that that was one of the most heartbreaking, but like still beautiful things that I've ever seen, with their black, you know,
I agree,
like over their face. Like, it was just, it was gorgeous, but it was, there was such a juxtaposition with that of how gorgeous it was, but then how awful it was.
Very sorrowful.
Yeah. Like, okay. Sorry, but keep going about
Allison. No, it's okay. So, you know, not only that, like, does she force her to do something that she knows is going to make her extremely uncomfortable? Mm-hmm. It's the conversation for me. It's, she immediately is like, oh, what she saw last night. And I don't think it was like in a comforting my daughter kind of way. It was like, oh, I need to cover my fucking tracks. Make sure you don't say anything.
Yep.
It was a dream. You didn't see anything. Right. You know, so like,
it was shit.
I didn't like that. Yeah. And God, there was another thing that she did in the episode. I think it might have been with
Otto. Well, it was probably with, maybe with Otto, or maybe with Aegon, when she, like, when he was sobbing and she just didn't comfort
him. Oh, yeah, that too. Definitely that. Like, she didn't
comfort him. I understood that. Like, the thing is, like, just on that point, like, about just the way that the Hightower Targaryens are, that the ones that are Viserys Targaryens, the way that they love one another, and like I think this speaks to Allison having lost her mom so young and having pretty much only been raised by Otto, that she's like a spitting image of Otto. If we can't agree on that, then we can't agree on anything, because like, she is like a literal like walking Otto, just with a puss, you know?
Yeah.
I agree. So there's like, there are three scenes here, and we'll talk about Rhaenyra's scene a little later, but like, there's a scene in the beginning where she's crying, and she's crying for Helena, and she's saying like, it's literally the starting scene outside of like the chaos that happens in the Red Keep, but like, it's the first thing that we see is like her and Otto in a chamber together, and she's like, you know, I'm not like, the boy is dead, but you know, like
what they did to Helena.
Yeah, no, but she's gonna suffer.
Right.
And obviously, like, that's, you know, clear, and I'm happy that she mentioned it. She's sobbing about it, but like, it doesn't, there's no follow through. Like, she clearly compartmentalizes all of that and then is just like, okay, well, now it's about duty, and now it's about propaganda, and now it's about our image, and now it's about, you know, all of these other things. Like, there's so many ulterior motives with her. And then, yeah, and you're right, when she approaches Helena about it, Helena, first of all, the shot of her just, like, you know, I don't know, sobbing on her bedpost, and then that's when Allison comes in and is just like, hey, sorry, we've got to do this. And Helena's like, I don't want to. And of course, she knows her own daughter. She knows that this is not anything that she would want to do. Helena never wanted to be queen. She never wanted her kids to be royal. Like, she wanted to live in the shadows. She wanted to talk to spiders for the rest of her life and just be happy. Right? Like, you know, and so, like, in Allison, even just that, like, okay, but this is what duty call, like, duty calls.
Oh, my God. Helena's favorite pastime is collecting daddy long legs out of the baseboards.
Right, exactly. Oh, like, no, for real. Like, it's, like, no, but, like, it, yeah, you're right. Like, if anything, I didn't find Allison more repulsive this episode than I have ever. So, it's actually really interesting that you and I, like, debated about it a week ago, and now you're, like, now it's coming. I feel like Allison is on her villain arc.
I mean, she is on her villain arc, but I still think, like, she has human moments, and obviously she's choosing the wrong path, but I can see that she's still struggling with it. Like, that, I think, like, there's a morality, there's a humanness to that.
Oh, whatever. Whatever. You know what?
Fuck off.
Okay. We're struggling with the human path. She is in her fuck it era.
Well, she literally commanded Aemon to fucking kill anybody.
No, but one thing that I will say, and we will come back to Allison and Helena, because Helena deserves her airtime. But one thing that I will say about Allison is that she said in the beginning, what if it, like, it was me, I sinned, it's, you know, it's God punishing us, or the gods, or who, you know, the seven-pointed fucking whatever that caused this to happen. Clearly, because she was fucking Kristen Cole, who should have been outside watching. We were talking about last week, why are there no guards?
Right.
Kristen Cole is the fucking, is the president, whatever it's called, of the King's Guard. Right? That fucker should have been on duty, number one. So, like, that's
like, was on, like, booty instead.
Right. Well, no, but, like, so there's the guilt of, like, if I weren't riding the shit out of him this night, then maybe, like, the baby would be alive. So that's number one. But number two is that, like, she, like, so that's just the premise of it. And she's like, oh, yeah, you know, what if it's because of sins that I've made, et cetera, et cetera. And Otto is like, oh, no. Hush, child. It's fine. And then throughout, obviously, we see the guilt, like, sinking into, like, you know, her and Kristen and whatever throughout the episode. But then at the end of it, when she's having the conversation with Otto, and she's like, you know, I've sinned, whatever she says. And she's like, he's like, I didn't want to hear about it. And then, like, I feel like she doesn't believe in God. I feel like she believes that Otto is her, like, I don't know. It's just almost like, because he was like, I don't want to hear about it, she was released of it. And that's why she went back and fucked Kristen again. I don't know. She's got, like, a skewed perception of what's right and what's wrong, this girl. Like, it's not clear. She doesn't live by religion, although she acts like she does. She raises her children to be certain people, but then she's hypocritically the opposite person. And then not only that, she, like, blames Kristen, but then fucks him in the same 30 seconds.
Yeah, that was my idea.
And then she also hates Rhaenyra, but, you know, she's doing the exact same thing that Rhaenyra did, except even worse.
Because I don't think she hates Rhaenyra. I think Otto, I don't think anyone actually hates Rhaenyra. I think Kristen Cole
hates Rhaenyra.
Okay, sorry. I forgot about his fucking crazy ass.
Jesus Christ.
He really hates her. everybody else, it only has this like shit against her because they want to stay in the throne. Like they want the control. You know, like it's auto planting like this shit. But
she's allowing it to happen. She's allowing Otto to send her and her daughter unwillingly in a funeral procession through the city of King's Landing with someone in front of them saying, Rhaenyra the Cruel.
Rhaenyra.
Look at this 4-year-old boy decapitated by Rhaenyra. Like, it,
yeah,
like,
Alicent wants power too. She's been powerless.
Regardless, but like, if you actually had any love for somebody, you would not let that happen. You would never want to tarnish because it's like she.
Unless you love your kid more, and you and they, no, they think that Rhaenyra just acted against them.
No. They know Rhaenyra would never do that. Especially
but Damon did, and that's her husband.
Like, as Rhaenyra says, like, I would never do that, especially to Helaena.
Okay, but her husband did. And that's right. Fucking close. That's basically okay. The same person. Okay. So I mean, her house acted against their house.
Damon the Cruel, but it wasn't Damon that's out for the throne. It's Rhaenyra. So they said
Correct. It's politics, baby.
Well, it's propaganda, baby. But
yes.
Here we go.
Yeah,
all I'm saying is that Alicent, I feel like I can't ever tell where Alicent, because she's so fucking cold, I can't ever tell where she feel like where she will draw the line. I am actually on this note very excited to see Otto not in her presence, because at the end of the episode we see like Otto gets relieved pretty much of Hand of the King, right? He doesn't want so, but it is literally a relief, I bet, because like there's so many memes that I'm just like, he's just like, god damn it, like at this point Rhaenyra, like I just wish that she would be queen. Yeah, like, because this is too much, like this is fucking crazy. But he, you know, him and Alicent have a conversation, and she's closer with him than she is with her own children. I just want to note that.
Yeah, definitely.
She's not close to the children at all. The way that she approached Helaena, the way that she didn't approach Aegon, the way that, I don't know. I've never seen her in close quarters with Aemon.
She's very finicky. Like, her emotions are fickle. I understand why, like, you say, like...
I don't think that they're fickle. I think that she doesn't really give a shit about her kids, to be honest.
Well, we're going to find out.
Well, I mean, I guess, yeah. Like, she cares, like... I think she cares about them in the sense of, like... She wants them to be okay, sure. Like, she wants them to be powerful and, you know, and because, I mean, the thing is, like, if you think about it, that's all Otto taught her, is that, like, the only way to win in this world is to be powerful. The only way to win in this world is to be smart or to be, I don't know, like, well, like backed up. But, like, I think that that's how she thinks about it. I don't think that she has like a real like love for them, you know? In the first season, it really showed that like she had a lot of love for Helaena and she had a lot of love for Aemon, and Aegon was kind of the tosser. Like he was also in the first season, like by the time that he got, you know, in his teens, like he was kind of a drunken whore. So like, you know, I get that, but like, I don't know. It like, so far this season, it doesn't seem like she has a lot of love for them.
I think it's just the compartmentalizing and the like pragmatism of her. Like, I think she loves her kids. I just think she can't understand how they are not as dutiful as her. You know, I think Alicent feels classic like Virgo. She has sacrificed so much in her life that everybody else needs to as well.
Right. Well, I mean, she's not sacrificing anything anymore.
Like her. Like, I'm just like, okay, this bitch is starting to piss me off now. Like, she's being super selfish. So anyways, I do want to talk about the procession a little bit. So the one thing that I will say that I thought was really interesting, but it made me really sad, when she does have the conversation and Helena says, "This is for my boy," and she like shoves that piece of fabric into her arms, it's like the wrap that's around his body. But I think that Helena must have embroidered it herself.
Probably, yeah.
Because it was embroidered. And I was like, oh, my sweet angel, Helena. Wow. You sweet, oh my God. Baby.
Well, if so anything.
I like that. Because, wait, like. I forgot that, like, I don't even know what this would be, but, like, crafts is, like, a love language.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's probably acts of service and or quality time, both of them, because she spent quality time creating this act for you.
Yeah.
You know? No, but like that's on Helena deserves better. Hashtag Helena deserves better. We both agree on that.
Truly. So yeah. Also just a little bit on her on the procession, you know, I thought it was really just, it was hard to watch. Just a good depiction of like, you know, she's like basically like having like a fucking panic attack. And I was like, oh my God, why are you crowding her?
It's terrible.
Like, this is too much stimulation right now for this woman.
Right. No, it wasn't the people that were the problem. It was Allison that was the problem.
Yes, absolutely. But I'm just saying, like, it starts getting overwhelming. You know, and also when this is going to be morbid, but when the fucking wheel got stuck and they're rocking the thing, they're showing the kid the body. I thought he was going to fall out. I was like, please, Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, please don't do that. Thank God they did not. I don't know why my intrusive thoughts went there, but they did.
Oh, no, but it's Game of Thrones, so of course they go there.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, please don't do this. So anyways, just tidbit on the procession. So let's talk about Rhaenyra and Daemon, because one thing, just like in regards to Alicent and the child being slain, like, she specifically is like, why would I go after Helena's child, an innocent, not just the child, but like Helena, an innocent person, like,
right, exactly,
who she probably spent time with. And well, love.
Right. No, and like the thing is like they know each other. They're cousins.
Right.
Or they're siblings, technically. Like Rhaenyra and Aegon and Aemond and Rhaenyra and Daeron, who we will talk about, are siblings. Like they're half siblings, right? Like so it's a very close family quarter. It seems so distant because Rhaenyra and Daemon left, you know, I don't know, 6 years prior and raised their own kids. And, and so it's just, there's just been very much a distance. And so it's, and you know, and that, I don't know, that happens with families sometimes. It's literally relatable because it actually happens with families these days. It's not just the,
situation. Like everyone raises their immediate families like in different
places. And like, no, I have 7 brothers and sisters, but like I live in fucking New York City, but like, no, I want to move to San Francisco. So I'm going to move, I'm going to start a family there. And then it's very distant. So in that case, like there's just no real, I don't know. There's no real like bond, like
there's no quality time. They're not spending the time together, and you know, when the years go by, things change. So
exactly
on that note though, like with Daemon and Rhaenyra, the argument that they get in,
I have so many thoughts. With that, I was not happy. Like, okay, so I understand that this has to happen, and I do know that, like, in this season and in this whole epilogue, what happens, you know, this whole storyline is that Daemon and Rhaenyra eventually part ways, and they're kind of fighting the same fight, but they're not doing it cooperatively. And that leads to, you know, that just is just a domino in the effect of the destruction of everything. I thought that they were, especially as, like, you know, the thing is first of all, when Rhaenyra was speaking in this, or when she was arguing in this, I literally saw so much of Viserys, which I was proud of. But it was very clear that, like, her father, who had raised her, had her by his side, like, kind of taught her how to be, like, political and diplomatic and calm and reserved and save your loud voice for when it matters. And it was, it, like, clearly she has learned from Viserys. Like, and I love, you know, to be honest, props to the people that wrote the way that season one started and ended, and then the way that this started, because I'm like, I love that we got so much of Viserys in season one, because we got to see how diplomatic and fair and calm that he was. And Rhaenyra very much showed that, especially in a position of privacy. Mm-hmm. And with Daemon, who clearly, like, both of them can pop the fuck off, right? Like, yeah. And she did not. She was so
reserved. She demonstrates a lot of restraint, which is a lot like Viserys. Even in his private moments, he did that.
Yes.
And I think that's a really nice parallel. Like, I'm glad that you pointed that out.
Right. No, and I appreciate that for her. Although I am fire as fuck. And I'm not satisfied, because I know that when Daemon leaves, he is gone for at least a while. Like, that's all I know. I don't know if he dies out there. I don't know what happens.
I personally feel the same way. Like, I thought the blowout could have been bigger, more fiery.
I wanted it to be appropriate
that it should have been, honestly. Right,
no,
like,
exactly. I wanted them to be shouting. He goes to, like, grab her neck like he did in season one, and I was screaming at my TV, don't you fucking touch her again. But all I wanted him to do was just, like, I wanted them to, I didn't want them to fight each other. But I did want them to go, like, I wanted them to scream. I wanted them to feel this immense emotion. Like, they're both very fiery. And the idea that him actually finally leaving was based on, like, this very, I don't know, kind of calm communication. It was an argument for sure. But the idea that he left... I would have assumed that this was the preemptive, like, and then there was another argument that happened after that. It was way, way more aggressive and passionate and just in your face. Like, that would have made more sense for him to actually get out, like, to leave. Because now that he's gone, he's gone. Like, he's gone for a while. I know that.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, I think it could have been a little bit more passion. I understand that they're older now, so of course there's going to be a little more restraint, but still, like, this was a big thing. It's like, she just lost a son. It was a huge deal. Why would you do that? Why would you also construe my words?
Right.
And use it to you, like...
Right.
You are the king consort. Sorry, but like, that doesn't give you power.
Right. No, but my biggest thing is, like, okay, this is fine to have on, like, a random Tuesday in fucking August, right? Like, you have this kind of argument, but, like, you're in the middle of war. Like, your tension, like, the tension is at an all-time high. The tension between you two is at an all-time high. All of the pressure is, like, at boiling point. Like, you're at fucking war. And someone just, especially for Rhaenyra and for both of them, because both of them are equally involved. Rhaenyra, it's her name, and Daemon, it's his doing. It's like, they're literally parading a dead four-year-old around the street. But, like... screaming Rhaenyra's name, but it's Daemon's fault. And I'm just like, how is that? Like, pressure would be boiling point.
Oh, absolutely.
I wouldn't be able to have a soft conversation with a single
honestly,
person.
If I was Rhaenyra, I would have killed him. I'm not kidding.
That's what I'm saying.
Took out that fucking blade that old dearest daddy fucking gave me down when he fucking told me he was gonna make me queen. The one with the writing, the one that Allison tried to kill me with, I would have killed him with that fucking blade. I'm like, bitch, you're done. You're done. Right. I can't trust you.
That's what I'm saying.
And she's known that. And she said it. And like, I really appreciated that she said those things. But I'm like, yeah, why would you let him live? Right. Sorry.
No, but I think that her, you know, and that's, so that's on me just thinking that that scene could have been like 7 times more powerful.
Well, right. You know? I agreed, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I would have been so fucking angry that I probably would have killed him. If I wouldn't have killed him, it would have been crazy. Like, there would have been all kinds of shit happening. I would have been shattered.
Well, right. I probably would have beat the shit out of him. I wouldn't have killed him.
Oh, yeah. I would have had, like, a Kingsguard in there beating the fuck out of him while I was, like, berating his ass.
Right. So, but the thing is, like, what we do know, or at least what my thought is, and I think what I do know from, like, anything that I've heard of however this story unfolds, is that regardless, Daemon is never going to be Queen Green, or Queen Green.
Queen Green.
He is always going to be King Black. And so Rhaenyra, I think that he goes to Harrenhal after this to try to take over. And Harrenhal, like, if you look on the map of Westeros, like, Harrenhal is, like, an incredibly strong stronghold of anybody that's trying to get north or south. Harrenhal is right in the middle of it. So it's, you know, just a big position for anybody. And I'm pretty sure that's where Daemon's going. And, like, the thing is, like, Rhaenyra, I'm like, okay, like, she may not trust him, but he's still 100% about her cause.
In his own way.
Whether at the end of the day that's his cause or her cause, the point is that he is a strong factor to help her army and to help her cause. Yeah. At least right now. So I feel like at the same time, like, yes, she's just lost this. I feel like, in terms of love, like, I feel like she lost all love when he started plotting when she was in labor and they lost that baby, mm-hmm. right? Like, I feel like, and she mentions it again during this, you know, that argument that they had. But, like, the thing is, like, I wouldn't kill him because I'm like, he is a strong contender and I need him to still fight for me. And that's what he's going to do. The thing is, like, he is loyal to himself, but at the same time, he is, like, and in the same regard, he is loyal to her for that reason.
I just don't trust him. So it's like, I get what you're saying.
I get, like, in terms of war, and I think that that's what I think Rhaenyra is thinking, and maybe that's why she's so calm with him. I couldn't be, but, and, like, no. Like, I'm just, like, especially in terms of war, like, if I have a husband or whatever, and it's very passionate, it's very whatever, like, him and I would fight like cats and dogs while I was at war, right? I'd be like, I don't want to know you for, you know, 6 months because I've got to deal with this shit. But with the two of them, both of them are fighting on the same side. They're just both fighting different battles. But she knows that he is not someone that she wants to lose.
He's an asset. At the end of the day, like, strategy wise.
He's fearless and he also knows how to lead people. Like, he
And he has a fucking dragon.
Well, right.
You know? So, you know, yeah, the cards are stacked in his favor.
Right. No, but yeah. What I will say for all the Daemon fans out there is that I'm fucking pissed with him. I was pissed with him, I think, since he choked her up in last season. And when he went to go do it again and she flinched, I was like,
okay, I'm actually glad that you brought this up. So one thing that I did want to say, just like in an overall thought kind of way, one thing that really pisses me off, like, Rhaenyra is fiery, and I know that she's a dragon rider. They put way too much trust in the dragons, like, to be protectors. And, like, I'm like, you are fiery. Like, you need to take a note from Arya Stark and like learn how to fight. Like, I don't understand why like the royals, especially on the Targaryen side, like Alicent, she was raised to be like more a proper lady. But like, and like some of the families, do any of the families ever train the girls? Like who was?
No. Usually girls are never trained. Arya Stark trains herself.
Exactly. Right. But like, what about Daemon's wife that we're pretty sure he killed, Rhea? She was
she hunted and whatever, but like that was also like a
family thing.
Oh, right. And I think that she probably didn't have any like brothers. And so it was like, just like Brienne of Tarth was like, didn't have any brothers.
Well, and what about fucking Lady Mormont, the little girl?
I guess like there is like a sense of, you know, raise your daughters to be like your sons. Sure. But like, that wasn't the time at all.
Yeah,
and especially, I think especially the Targaryens, like they didn't need to know how to fight. None of them needed to know how to fight because they had dragons, right? Like there was like, and I think that was one of the biggest things of their downfall in just in terms of history, is that like they were so like confident because they had dragons that no one was ever gonna, you know, was ever gonna go against them, that they like themselves as people grew soft. And that's what Daemon, that's his whole thing, is like, okay, my brother grew soft, as if he was allowed to, and that's not true. Like, he was the king and he should have remained strong, but just because we have dragons, it's, you know, they like, it's the same thing that I was saying last week with like them not having any knights at their doors. Like, they're just so overly confident that they're protected.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know if that's exactly what it is. I don't know. But like, I think that that's like, there's a confidence factor, and sometimes an ill, I don't know, like there's just a, like a false confidence that happens from that.
No, I agree. I remember asking you about that last pod too, because I was like, why was it so easy for them to get in? Like,
right. And I think that
Conqueror before had a bunch of dragons and he probably didn't need to man the halls like that.
Right. And I also think that like, if we're talking about the girls, like they were not, like we're talking about women that are brought up in King's Landing, which is very much like you are a lady of the court and you learn how to dress nice and
dance and prep,
but, and dance
an
and, exactly and play a harp and etc. Whereas like Lady Mormont was raised on Bear fucking Island, baby, and she was like, there was no court there, so she learned how to hunt and fish and fight and just like, and Brienne of Tarth, like, gives us her story of, like, her dad is a lord and wanted her to learn all these things. And she was like, no, dad, I don't want to. And he was like, okay, well, if you're going to sword fight, I might as well teach you.
Yeah.
And that's why she got so good. Like,
yeah.
It's very uncommon. It's very uncommon for a woman to know how to fight or to know how to
Well, it just really pisses me off when they're in such high positions of power. I'm like, you're literally going, you know, like, now you need to start training. Like, if someone's coming at you, like, you need to at least be able to fucking throw up, like, a block, throw your hands up, stop something, at least stop a sword. I mean, I'd rather get my fucking arm cut off than die.
I mean, the swords then were very sharp. I feel like you would get your wrist cut off and then your neck sliced.
Okay, well, regardless, like, she was literally cowering in a corner, like...
Well, okay, so let's just give some context. We're talking about, and I did just want to talk about this before we end the episode, but, like, Sir Eric and Eric.
Sir, I think it's Eric.
It's like, Eric and Eric, but, like...
going somewhere.
Well, no, but, like, they're both like Eric. Well, yeah, okay. No, they're both... Yeah, they're both pronounced Eric to make it.
Well, we're gonna say Eric and Arik to differentiate. Well,
no, I can't. Madison, I can't even talk about it like that because I don't even know who's who. So it's Eric and Eric, and it doesn't matter who's who.
Eric and Aaron.
No. It's Eric and Eric. It's Eric and Eric. No, but there's one that came in season one and. and gave Rhaenyra King Varys's crown, right? And, you know, I don't know, knelt to her and everything, and he is, you know, the most beautiful person that ever lived because of that. It was just, it was gorgeous the way that he did it and the way that they shot it. And I knew already that there was going to be tragedy between the twins because Eric and Sir Eric were, regardless, this is the episode that it happens, people. This is the episode where it's, you know, and the thing is, sorry, this is, I'm just all over the place because it has sent me, this specific thing has been, I don't know, just shitty to watch, but Kristen Cole is the one that actually sends him. That's not in the books.
So wait, we have to break this down. I want to just say something on that. When Kristen Cole is assigning him this mission, and I just want to say hats off to the actor. I know, like, fuck him, fuck her, Sir Kristen Cole, but hats off to the actor because when he sends him and you look in his, he did the best dead eyes. His eyes looked so fucking scary. And dead, like blank, nothing was in there except for like rage and hate and prejudices. I don't even know the man.
So on that note, I want to say that Fabian Frankel is the person that plays Kristen Cole. And this is just a PSA. Please stop commenting on his posts on Instagram saying that, like, he's horrible and you want to kill him and you hope that he died and all of this stuff. Fabian Frankel, like, he literally had to turn off comments on all of his posts because so many people were berating him with just, like, such specific hate messages. It's been awful. I've been reading about it. Guys, if you're listening to this, Fabian Frankel is not Kristen Cole. He's actually, if you watch any interviews with him, he's like the sweetest person in the world.
He's just a terrific actor.
Like,
right, which is a testament to his acting.
It's a testament, but he does not deserve that. The thing is, like, I actually read on one of like the comments and was like, oh, if only Cersei at that time could turn off her actors, like the woman that played Cersei. And I'm just like, yeah, no, imagine like how shit it is to be a villain because you cast it in a role and you just receive so much hate. Like, please stop doing it.
Joffrey did as well.
Joffrey, literally, I think he had an Instagram for like 3 months and then deleted it. Yeah. Like, I don't even think he's on Instagram anymore. Yeah. So, like, if you are, or if you know anybody, or if you see on Reddit, or if you see on Twitter, or anything, like this is like it's a truly terrible thing that's happening, and they're just actors; they're not the characters. And like specifically with Fabian Frankel, who plays Kristen Cole, just watch one interview with him and see how like sweet and kind he actually is. He's just a terrific actor and can play a truly soulless, horrible human being. But he, you know, they don't deserve that as people. Anyways,
no, they absolutely don't.
I need to plug that.
But yeah, so not only does he set that in motion, it's a basically suicide mission.
Right.
You know, and unfortunately, as much as like fuck the other twin for going team green, like they both have the same philosophy when it comes to being like dutiful and honorability. I don't know if that's a word, but being honorable. Mm-hmm. So him having to do this, going through with it. I mean, yes, Rhaenyra, that fucking sucked. I hated that she couldn't, like, I mean, yeah, what was she really gonna do? But still, like, I just wish that she had some kind of fucking training. I hope that we get that in the future.
Even if she had training, she had zero weapons. So, like, I don't know. I'm like, she was in her bed chamber. So, like, if anything,
he did infiltrate as a twin. She called him Eric.
Right. And exactly. It was the best, like, masked infiltration,
That would have happened if it wasn't for the fucking whore.
The white worm. Yeah. Who I did want to just like mention once and just be like, I don't want to talk about her, but like, I do think that she is going to be significant probably in this season. She was significant towards the end of last season. And I think that she might, because Rhaenyra let her go, I hope that her loyalties lie with Rhaenyra from now on, because she is powerful, as Lord Varys was, the Spider King, way back when. So, like, or in Game of Thrones. But, like, yeah, no, the scene with the twins, that was difficult. It was just difficult to watch, because, like, you couldn't tell who was who, right? Like,
oh, my God. Like,
on a watching level, it was fucking hard. But, like, and they all... But, like, it was, like, the way that, like, it was truly, truly awful to watch. Yeah, and
I think that was one of the most emotional scenes I've ever seen in, like, the Game of Thrones universe, to be honest.
Right. It was the most emotional fighting scene I've ever seen, ever.
Yeah, and like, and it, the killer is, like, when he's, what does he say? Something to him, and then he says, "You parted us." Literally lost it, like, hit in my stomach, immediate tears.
I know. And then I'm like, oh no, the right one won, we've got it. And then he says, "I'm so sorry, my queen," and then fucking falls on his sword. And I'm just like, Jesus, like, it was brutal to watch.
And I actually want to say something that I thought they did really good in acting and cinematography. Like, after he kills his brother, there's a moment where he, like steps back, he like almost stumbles in a sense, and to me it, like, they don't do it in slow motion, but it feels so slow motion coded. Mm-hmm. And like a very, it's like he felt the death of his twin right there.
It was almost like his soul, like,
in that emotional psychological way. And that was really well done, because
his soul just got knocked out of him. Yeah.
And I think, like, twins, like, sorry to be random, and I actually need to fact check this, but I think, like, they feel things, like, when they're...
There are stories
about that.
Right, no, but, like, one of the things that he says earlier when Kristen is, like, asking him to do this, not quite yet asking him, because Kristen is just a piece of shit in the scene and is basically just like, oh, like, is accusing, you know, it's the other Eric of whatever, like, defamation and treason and all this stuff. And he was like, oh, I bet you feel the same, or, you know, however he's accusing him. And then the other Eric, this Eric, is like, no, we shared one body, or two souls, one body, or one body, two souls at once, but we disagreed. I don't remember what the line is, and I'm killing myself for not remembering what that line was, but, like, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful, almost,
yeah, it was super concise
of what was gonna happen. No, but, like, it was just like they truly loved each other, and, like, it, you know, and I think that that's, you know, to say about a lot of twins, but, like, I don't want to generalize, but, like, we can understand that two twins, like, they do share so much together. And so that was what was so, like, poetically awful about what happened, you know?
It really sucked. I definitely think it was the most gutting scene that I've seen in the universe of Game of Thrones. Like, it was like immediate tears. Like, I definitely, you know, shed some tears over that. I was like, holy fuck. Like, I can't believe that just happened. So sorry to be abrupt. This is not a good segue, but I do want to talk about Aemond lastly.
Oh, yes. Okay. Okay.
So we do see him in the brothel, and he's like with the head mistress.
Right.
And he's laying naked in, like, her lap. They're, like, in a bed, there's candles. And he's very, very frail. Like, you know, he looks really small. Something about the way they shot him, even, like, her, like, she looks, I don't want to say big, it's not like that, but she just looks like more like she looks healthier than him, like more filled out, like she has more meat on her bones. Like, I don't know how to describe it. So like, what I thought was really interesting, and we'll get into like a little bit of the meat of what they say, but my initial thought, because I love art, it reminded me immediately of La Pietà by Michelangelo. That's like mm-hmm. from the Renaissance. Mm-hmm. And I had to look it up because I was like, oh my gosh, like I forgot like what the meaning was behind this. But Pietà means pity in Italian. And the statue represents the sixth sorrow of Mary. There's seven sorrows. And it's kind of like the about Jesus's like life and death. Those are like the seven mm-hmm. things that she goes through, but this is specifically depicting the sixth one, where she takes his body down from the crucifixion. That's mm-hmm. what the sixth sorrow is. But it reminded me so much of that sculpture, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if like there'll be any, I don't know, like there are a lot of religious undertones, I think, in Game of Thrones generally in the universe, right. Like, and, right. and in this, like, especially with the Hightower. So I'm like, oh, like, yeah, he's Targaryen, but he's also Hightower, mm-hmm. Like their kids. So I was like, oh, like this is kind of like an interesting, pious.
No,
I don't
no.
know if they did that purposely. That was just my like immediate.
No, but like I think that they did, because you and I talked about it on Sunday night, and like you sent me like sculptures inspired by it, and like it made the most sense. And for anybody that's listening, please like look that up, because it's very much what it looks like. Especially, I think like I think because of how like. I don't want to say skinny, because I feel like skinny is a, you know, I don't know. It's a inflammatory word, but like, especially how like, I don't know, like meek is also, it's worse. I don't know. Amund looks like he's naked and he's vulnerable, and she's there, you know, and he's laying on her like as if, you know, just a very, she's a very maternal figure for him.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that that's one of the biggest things to point out, is that like, and also just in contrast to how Allison has been with them, like Allison is not a maternal woman at all. You know, not really. But like, I think that he's talking then about, you know, just what happens in it. Like he's talking then about, you know, like finding the coin and understanding that Daemon was actually looking for him. He understands that it was Daemon that put the hit out, and it was probably for him. It was never for Jaehaerys. And she was like, oh, well, lucky for you, you know, you were with me last night. And yeah. So it's like, it feels like this is like an every night thing, which I think is interesting to point out, is that he's literally seeking a maternal comfort every night as his, you know, tall, skinny, naked self.
Yeah. I mean, obviously maternal and sexual, like they're definitely having sex too.
I don't know if they are. I don't know if they are. The, what the representative, like,
you this think they never had sex?
No. Well, it's not that I don't know if they have, because he actually has a dick, but this is what, like when you and I were talking right before we jumped on this podcast, this was like, oh, this is harkening back. There was some scenes in Game of Thrones where the Unsullied, who were some of Daenerys' soldiers, who infamously got their dick and balls chopped right off to be, like, quote-unquote, better warriors. And they were, like, going to brothels to literally just lay with women. Especially maternal women, women with big boobs that were curvy, and like they would just lay with them, and the women yeah. would just stroke their hair, and you know, and that's all they wanted.
God, you know what? Sigmund Freud would have loved this fucking
show.
Well,
right. So that's like, that's what I meant when I was like, I'm like, yeah, no, Amund might be like just. I don't know. I don't.
Yeah,
like,
no, he's definitely
seeking. Can you see him having sexuality? I can't.
I think I can. Like, he's got like a seriousness about him where like,
okay, but he's got some serious kinks if he's got some, you know. I feel like he's that type. Like, he's just like, I don't want just like a blonde next door. Like I don't, I, regardless, I'm not going to gender profile him or sex profile him. My point is that this interaction with this mother hen at the brothel reminded me so much of the Dothraki guy, or not the Dothraki, the Unsullied guys that like would go and just, they just wanted a woman's touch. That's what it reminded me of. They clearly couldn't have sex with them, but they would still pay them for their time, and they just wanted to be cuddled and nurtured.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure there are definitely interactions like that from him, like that's all he wants. But
well, that's what it looked like.
Yeah, well, that is what it was, because she tries to kiss him, and he's like, no, not here. And then he like lays down further into her lap and is like talking to her in a more like affectionate, like I need to vent to somebody
way. And I think that's all it is. I think that's all it is. I think that he is looking for maternal comfort or just, you know, just feminine comfort. That's what I think.
Okay. Well, I think he's fucking this brothel mistress, headmistress as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. He's still a fucking guy. Okay, he might be a little bit weird, but he's out here fucking. He's a goddamn prince, for Christ's sake. Like, you do whatever you want.
Anything. We're talking about atypical people, and you're talking about Aegon, but you're not even considering Aemond to be atypical.
No, I didn't say that he wasn't, but
no, I don't think that he's fucking. I don't think that he's fucking at all. I think that he is wound the fuck up. I don't think he's fucking at all.
He literally has Vhagar. He's absolutely slaying vagina and buttholes or whatever, mouths, whatever he prefers. Okay. If I had
I don't think that he is.
Okay, whatever. Shut the fuck up. We're going to the next subject. I love you, but that's I just can't agree with you. I cannot fucking agree with you. His mom is everyone's fucking. This is Game of Thrones.
No, I think his mom's fucking, Aegon's fucking, Helena's not fucking, and Aemond aren't fucking, and they should have been married from the jump. Anyways.
Okay, all right. Anyhow, the point is, so sorry, just going back to the Pieta thing, and it being the sixth sorrow of taking her son down from the crucifixion, Jesus, and like contemplating over his body. I do wonder if like Alicent will go through like types of sorrows regarding her children. Well, I mean, this is Game of Thrones, so duh, yeah, but I like wonder if like anything, if she'll like retrieve a body, like I don't know if that was like a foreshadow of anything. So I'm curious.
It could be. Yeah, no, I mean, I bet like at some point, I'm sure, like I feel like I, you know, to be honest, I feel like Allison, this is like, again, I feel dumb talking to people that probably know everything that's going to happen, but like, I feel like Allison is probably going to outlive probably everyone. And that is probably why I'm so annoyed by her.
Well, yeah. I mean, she's definitely,
she's going to find a way. She's a fucking cockroach, but like, she's going to find a way.
Yeah.
I think everyone is going to die around her. And then she might just off herself. That's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, no, and, you know, on that note, because just you asked me earlier about the castles, she is in the Red Keep, yes?
Yes.
In King's Landing. Okay, so something that I found out about keeps and castles and who lives on these floors, so even in real life, but also in, you know, like medieval times, but how they're setting it up in Game of Thrones, like royal families and their council live in the castles. So, like, royals on the top floor, on the second floor, it's, like, guards, and, like, that's where they eat, and, like, on the bottom is, like, you know, servants, but, like, a lot of those people don't even sleep in beds.
Right. Like, so like, the royals.
this explains just at least we're at the end of our episode, but we're talking about the beginning of this episode where there's just chaos.
Well, right. And I just want to say something about keeps in general. They are usually the strongest part of like the fortress. That's why people are always there. And thinking about Alicent and her probably outliving everyone, it reminds me a lot of Cersei. Cersei was in the keep for a long ass time, and it was a stronghold.
Yeah, yeah,
and
it is.
Outlived basically everybody.
Right.
So I think like Alicent, if she doesn't move around too much, like she has a good chance of like sticking it out.
Yeah, she's Cersei, but you know, 200 years before. Yeah.
Not as mean, but just as cunning. Oh man, as much as I hate Cersei, I fucking miss her.
Yeah, you know, I'm rewatching Game of Thrones right now and I forgot how much I hated her. And I think towards the end is when you're like you actually start to understand her a little bit, but I am just before Tommen dies, which is where I am. So.
Oh my, that's my worst scene from that whole fucking series.
No, it's your best scene.
Yeah, it's my best and worst. So anyways, on that, we are at the end of our episode and I do want to just say, because we love House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones, we always have to log into our little podcast and we have to give ourselves a name. So mine this week is Madraxxus. Sam didn't give herself one, but it will be Samraxxus. And we will do Targaryen-themed names every week. And I'll try to remember to tell you guys, because last week they were funny as fuck too.
Okay. We are at the end, but follow us on Instagram, HBHostPod. We post constantly. We're always responding. You know, we're just here for the fucking chat, guys. And
yeah, theories, you know, like whatever you guys think, let us know, because I'm interested. I want to know.
We will be posting about what Lady Whistledown's dragon would be called. So if you took note of that and are interested in that, then follow us on Instagram. And
yes, please. We'll need to do a poll.
But we love you guys. Bye.
Bye.